It's Ian Pickus, and we are back in the Congressional Corner today with a first-term Democratic congressman from New York's 19th District, Josh Riley. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, Ian. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. So just a couple housekeeping things. It's our first time talking since you were about to go to the inauguration back in January, but then you ended up in the hospital with pneumonia for several days. So how are you doing?
Thank you for asking. I appreciate it. No, I'm feeling great. You know, it was unexpected. It started off with a flu that I caught traveling with my little kids, and then ended up with pneumonia that knocked me out for about 10 days. But I'll tell you, my team is so great, and we were able to continue doing the work we needed to do to get the office set up, and just so much outpouring of support from folks across the community really meant a lot to me.
Did you regret missing the inauguration? Because I know some people afterwards said they didn't really enjoy what they heard.
I had intended to go to it and would have liked to have attended it. I think with the President of the United States, I respect the office. And so whether I agree or disagree with everything that the person in the office says, I think it's important to show up for those things and to represent my constituents at those things. So let me put it this way. I would have much preferred to have been at an inauguration than in a hospital bed.
That makes a lot of sense. So since we last spoke, you also got your committee assignments for this term, science, space, and technology, and agriculture. Are you happy with the assignments?
I'm thrilled with the assignments I got. It's the two committees I asked to be on. I'll tell you, one of the things after I got elected, I sat down with my 4.5-year-old, and I told him, you know, one of the things Dad has to do is ask for committee assignments, and so I read to him the full list of committee assignments, and you can imagine trying to explain ways and means to a 4-year-old
or an adult.
With it. Yeah. Or an adult. Right. And I asked him again, what committee should Dad ask to be on? And he said, we have to do the one with the tractors. So we got ag, and the one with the rocket ships. And so we got science. And so he's happy with them. And I'm really happy with them because it's the two committees where I think I'm going to be able to do the most good for my constituents. Our farmers are just barely hanging on by a thread. They need a voice at the table as Congress negotiates a farm bill. You've heard me say this before. It's just for way too long, it's the big ag monopolies and their armies of lobbyists get to write the farm bill. And I'm committed to being a voice for small farmers across upstate New York. And the Science and Technology Committee, a lot of folks don't realize this, but it actually has a ton of work to do on manufacturing. The Chips and Science Act came through that committee, and they do a lot of work on aerospace manufacturing, which we have a lot of opportunities around across upstate New York. So these are two committees that are going to allow me to work across the aisle and get stuff done for my constituents.
So before I go back to agriculture, since you've raised chips, let's talk about chips for a second. President Trump says that chips should be repealed, and it's obviously a very important piece of legislation to upstate New York. Some big bets are being placed in our region on it. So are you worried about the future of the CHIPS Act?
I'm worried about it. I'm angry about what the president said about it at the joint address, and I'm doing something about it. I actually am using my seat on the Science and Technology Committee to push back against any plans from the administration to roll back the CHIPS and Science Act. We had a hearing last week where I used my time to make the case that this is a really important law, not just for rebuilding manufacturing and creating good jobs across upstate New York, but also for American national security. I mean, in what world does it make sense that we should rely on China and our adversaries for something as important as semiconductors? I mean, that's just, maybe that makes sense in Washington, I don't know, but up in upstate New York, folks realize our national security depends on making stuff in America. And that's what the CHIPS Act is all about. We're going to have chip fabs in Clay, just north of my district, Poughkeepsie, just southeast of my district. We're going to have some really exciting manufacturing in Lansing, not too far from where I am. So I'm going to fight like hell to keep that law in the books.
So let me hop back to agriculture for a minute. First question on that front. Is a farm bill likely to be completed this term? It was not finished last Congress.
I hope so. My sense is that there is a real interest across the aisle to get this thing done. I, of course, can't speak for what the majority is going to move quickly as their priorities. I know they have a lot they're trying to do with their budget plan, which would rip healthcare away from my constituents to give tax cuts to their donors. So I can't tell you what their priorities are, but I know that getting a farm bill done is a top priority of mine. And one of the things I've done around that is I brought together an upstate agriculture advisory council. Just met with them in Oneonta a couple weeks ago. It's about 25 folks in all different aspects of our ag economy to advise me on their needs so that I can be sure those are being met in the farm bill. So I'm committed to getting it done, and I hope others are too.
So the other day here at WAMC, my colleague Pat Bradley did some reporting on the New York Farm Bureau's national priorities for the year. And one thing that came up is just the uncertainty on the tariff front. The Farm Bureau says they'd like to expand trade and not reduce it. And there's a lot of concerns about impacts down the line from slapping on these new retaliatory tariffs and so on. So what are you hearing on that front?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's consistent with what I'm hearing from my upstate ag advisory council. Just yesterday, I spent a bunch of time at a dairy farm in Delaware County, and we talked about exactly this. One of the biggest challenges that farmers are facing across our district in particular is the input costs. And so you take something, for example, like fertilizer, that everybody needs, and we're getting like 90% of it or something like that from Canada. And if you slap a 25% tariff on that, it's going to jack up the prices and it's going to make it really hard for our farmers to make ends meet. On the other side of that, you have if there's retaliation from places like Canada or Mexico, our farmers lose access to some of their markets. And so, look, our farmers, especially small farmers across upstate New York, are really just barely hanging on by a thread as it is. And I'm very worried that these tariffs could make things a lot worse. I had, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, a class came down, an eighth grade class, ninth grade class, high school class maybe, from Columbia County came down and when I was in D.C. and I gave them a tour and we got to go out on the house floor. It was really special for me. And I'll always remember one of the conversations I had was with a student who said that they had a family farm, and that student was sitting at the dining room table with their parents talking about whether they could keep the farm in the family or whether they had to sell the farm. And, I remember growing up and families having those conversations about what's your livelihood going to be like when the plants close. And I think about that family and I think, man, we should be doing everything we can to support them, not jacking up their prices and taking away their markets.
We just have about a minute left today. And in this particular segment, I just wanted to quickly ask you, do you have any thoughts on the life and legacy of someone who used to be a guest on this show, Nita Lowy, who represented the Hudson Valley for 16 terms? She died just the other day at age 87.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. You know, I was texting with my colleagues in the New York delegation yesterday, and it's, there are not too many politicians out there who can unite so many folks around just praise for them, and she was certainly one of them. I mean, her leadership around so many issues, including environmental conservation and just always fighting for the little guy. She's somebody who we should look to as an example, and of course she's going to be missed.
So as we speak, your chamber, the House, had narrowly passed a continuing resolution, more or less on party lines, and sent it to the Senate. And then in a couple of days' time, the New York Senator Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, said Democrats wouldn't support the bill, but then he changed his mind and they were able to keep the government open, although Schumer is in the eye of the storm right now for that decision. So first of all, how did you decide how you would vote on the CR package?
Well, I mean, I looked at it the same way I look at every single bill that comes across my desk, which is this good for upstate New York? If it is, I'll support it. Is it bad for my folks? If it is, I'm going to oppose it. And this bill was really bad for a lot of reasons. I'll tell you just one. You know, in our last segment, we were talking about the impact of tariffs and a potential trade war on our farmers. And when I had my Upstate Agriculture Advisory Board meeting, everybody was telling me, you know, look, sometimes tariffs are good. A lot of times tariffs are bad. We've got to look at this line by line and use a scalpel and not a sledgehammer. And one of the things that the continuing resolution did is it took away Congress's ability to address the tariffs issue. And so I wasn't going to sit down with a bunch of my farmers across upstate New York who told me they're struggling with tariffs and then turn around and vote for a bill that tied my hands in terms of helping them. I'll just give you one other example, and there's a bunch. Mm-hmm. A couple weeks ago, I was talking to a constituent in Tompkins County. And she's caring for her spouse who is struggling with Alzheimer's. And she just made the point to me, Josh, like, look, for the next generation that comes up, I hope that there's a cure for this or at least some treatments. And we've really got to do a lot more research in Alzheimer's. And the continuing resolution cut about $500 million from Alzheimer's research. And so there's no world that I was going to have that conversation with her about the importance of Alzheimer's research and then turn around and vote for a bill that cut it. So there's a bunch of examples of how this hurt upstate New Yorkers. And that for me is always going to be the test.
So then do you think that Schumer made the right decision?
Well, I disagree with it. Obviously I voted against the continuing resolution. He voted for it. I can't speak to, you know, Senate politics, and he has explained his reasons for voting for the continuing resolution. I have my reasons for voting against it. I disagree with him, and I think my vote reflects that.
And did you give any credence to the theory that with the way President Trump has approached his first few weeks back in office and the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, Elon Musk, that a shutdown would further empower those efforts?
I did think about that very seriously, and I came to the exact opposite conclusion that the Senate came to and that folks who supported the continuing resolution came to. I mean, my view is that by giving the administration this continuing resolution, it is essentially signing off on a lot of the things they've been doing, and potentially in some ways giving them a blank check. I mean, we've talked about this issue with tariffs, but you know, if we're worried about the Trump administration getting us into a trade war that's going to hurt upstate New York farmers, there's just no way I could support a bill that says, okay, and also, by the way, Congress can't do anything about it. I mean, I've got to fight for my farmers here, and this is a bill that basically gave the president a blank check around tariffs. And so I did think about that issue. I just came out on the opposite side of it.
And then this is a little confusing, but this keeps the government funded at the current level, as opposed to the earlier House GOP budget framework. What were your thoughts on that bill?
Yeah, and it is confusing. So the continuing resolution that we just voted for is basically to keep the lights on, although it's more complicated than that because it has cuts that we talked about separately. The majority is working on a budget, and I voted against the budget plan for one really simple reason. It screws over upstate New Yorkers, hardworking upstate New Yorkers, and it benefits billionaires and campaign donors. I'll give you one example. This bill would cut about, $880 billion out of Medicaid. Over 30% of the folks I represent have Medicaid for their health insurance. 40% of the kids that I represent have Medicaid for their health insurance. 50% of the babies who are born in my district are born through Medicaid coverage. And 70% of the seniors that I represent in nursing homes are on Medicaid. I was just touring a senior living facility up in New Berlin a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, that is consistent. Almost everybody there was on Medicaid. And what this bill would do is rip the rug out from under those folks, take their health care away. And to do what? It would just provide trillions in tax cuts for the top 1%, people like Elon Musk, people who don't need that extra money in their pockets. It would do that, and it would hurt everyday working families across upstate New York. So I voted against it.
This is actually our first time talking since one of the high-profile votes earlier in the term, and that was on the Laken Riley Act. A few dozen Democrats voted for it. You were one of them. How come?
I've always said we need an immigration system that is tough and fair. Our immigration system right now is completely broken, and I blame both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, for it. I don't think this bill is going to solve all the problems. We need bipartisan, comprehensive immigration reform that secures the border, sends lots of agents to the border, has better technology to detect fentanyl. I'm working on a bipartisan bill to do exactly that, develop new technologies, send them to the border, and make sure fentanyl's not coming across. And this bill, it doesn't solve all those problems, but it does address one issue, which is the situation where folks who are not documented and end up getting arrested for crimes ended up basically just cycling through the system instead of being held until their hearing. And so I thought this was a common sense piece of legislation, and that's how I'm going to look at things. If it's tough and it's fair and it's good for upstate New Yorkers, I'll support it.
What do you say to the opponents of the bill who raised concerns about removing an important layer of civil liberties to people who are accused but not convicted of a crime?
Yeah, I heard that concern before I voted on the bill, and I took it into account. I went through and I read all the bills. I read this one. I brought in people on both sides of the argument, heard everybody out. And my conclusion is that the bill does not raise the due process concerns that a lot of folks have raised. This bill simply says that if you're here unlawfully and you're arrested for a crime, then you get held until your hearing. It doesn't go beyond that. And I think that is common sense, frankly.
Congressman Riley, it's not a huge surprise, but your name is on a list of 26 House Democrats already being targeted by the National Republican Congressional Committee. Believe it or not, the next election is already on the horizon. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, it's not surprising. Look, this district is one of the most competitive in the country. I think that's the way it should be, frankly. I mean, we've got all these congressional districts across the country that are gerrymandered so that they're deep red or they're deep blue. You end up with a whole bunch of folks, politicians who can basically win elections without ever even talking to somebody on the other side of the aisle. And is it any wonder that we're as polarized in this country as we are? So I love the fact that this district is incredibly competitive. I love the fact that to be successful here, you've got to spend a lot of time with folks on the other side of the aisle, and you got to spend a lot of time trying to find common ground. I think that's how we were successful in the last election. It's how we're going to be successful in the next one. And I think if more districts were this competitive, we'd probably be better off as a country.
Yeah, you're in a rare fair fight district, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As we speak, you're getting ready to introduce a bill that is aimed at helping to lower egg prices, which is obviously a national concern. What are the details of this legislation?
Yeah, this is so the Lowering Egg Prices Act is a bill that I wrote and am introducing based on the conversations I've had with folks across upstate New York. You talk to anybody. I was just in East Durham yesterday at the St. Patrick's Day parade. You talk to folks, and I was asked, you know, what is it that you and your family are talking about at the kitchen table? What keeps you up at night? And I was talking to a guy yesterday who's a single dad, and he was saying he has a daughter. I think she's 12. And he was saying the cost of living is just, it's really hard. The housing prices are too high. The utility prices are too high. The grocery prices are too high. And I don't know if that guy was a Democrat or a Republican, but I know that my job is to do everything I can to make life a little bit better for him. And so what my bill would do is it would overturn a regulation from the Obama era that keeps about 400 million eggs per year off the market. It literally just requires farmers to throw away 400 million perfectly good eggs. I have two little kids, you know this, and I tell them, you know, don't waste your food, and they understand that concept, but apparently Washington doesn't. So I brought together Democrats, Republicans across the ideological spectrum, and this is a common sense bill. It's going to put 400 million eggs a year back onto the market. That's going to lower folks' egg prices, and boy, I hope it makes life a little bit better for that dad that I talked to yesterday.
Do you expect that it'll be able to pass this Congress?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the bills I introduce them with every expectation that we're going to get them passed. And this one, it's bipartisan. We've got folks, you know, everything from folks from the Freedom Caucus to folks on the left with the Democrats. And so I think we're building a really broad-based coalition here to get something done. And I mean, my God, like, people are so frustrated with Washington. I'm so frustrated with Washington. We were sent there to lower prices, bring back jobs, and secure the border. And since Congress got into session a couple months ago, I mean, nobody's focusing on the stuff that American people are focusing on at their kitchen tables. And so I'm really eager to introduce this bill and try to get us focused both on the Democratic side and on the Republican side on the issues that really matter to people.
It occurs to me to follow up and ask you this while we're talking about, you know, poultry and so on. People are pretty concerned about the spread of avian flu, and there have been some measures put in place in some areas of New York State to try to react to it. It's also a time, I think it's fair to say, of a move toward extreme, you know, government deregulation and cutbacks in all of these agencies. So how worried are you about something like avian flu right now?
Yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm very concerned about bird flu, especially concerned about what's going to happen here over the next couple of weeks and months as wild birds migrate back to the north. That's one of the ways this thing spreads, and God forbid if it mutates. So a big part of my job is to do something about it. We had outbreaks in Delaware County and Ulster County over the last couple of weeks. I think there's two things I'm focused on to try to help. One is pushing back against the administration when it's making cuts to the scientists and to the researchers who are on the front lines of fighting this thing. I just sat down last week when I was in Washington with some of the veterinarians, some of the scientists, some of the economists from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to get a briefing from them on exactly what's the current state of things and what do you guys need to make sure we're containing this virus. And then the other thing, I introduced a bill. It's bipartisan. A lot of our small farmers have to take containment efforts whenever bird flu is detected in the community. So, for example, when it was detected down in Delaware County, farms that are in the surrounding control area have to take measures to stop the spread. And when they do that, it costs them money. And we shouldn't be in a position where we're asking our small family farms to shoulder the burden of fighting this virus. And so I've got a bill, a bipartisan bill, to make sure that they're getting the support that they need. That's only fair to the small family farmers. It's also good science for stopping the spread.
On another subject, you had some thoughts on the 3-week wildcat strike by New York corrections officers. Are you satisfied with the apparent resolution that was reached?
No, I'm really not. And most of the corrections officers I've talked to are not happy with it either. I mean, I went down to talk to my constituents in Sullivan County who are on the picket line, and a bunch of them are just, you know, moms and dads who want to go to work hard, be safe, and come home to their kids. And the stories they're sharing with me about drugs getting into the prisons, about the violence that's happening because they're so understaffed. And I mean, this isn't just anecdotal. Just look at the data. We've seen a 170% spike in assaults and violence in the prisons. And then you've got leadership coming out and saying that, well, you know what, instead of doing anything to help improve the staffing situation, we're just going to now say that 70% staffing counts as 100% staffing. I mean, I don't know in what world anybody who's balancing a budget at the kitchen table can just wave a wand and say 70% equals 100%. But apparently in Albany, you can do that. And it's a slap in the face to these folks who are working so hard. And one of the things that they told me on the picket line and that I think is really important on this is that they're not just looking out for their own safety in the prisons. They want a situation where they can keep inmates safe, too. And right now, if there's some folks in the prisons who are really predatory and really violent, the corrections officers' hands have been tied, and so they can't do anything about that to keep the rest of the prison population safe. I mean, they told me stories about separating some folks in the morning, but then the way the rules are written, they got to put them all back together in the afternoon, and they're breaking up like three or four fights between the exact same people every day. So, you know, I think we really got to revisit this whole thing because the current situation is not sustainable. And the last thing I'll say on this, I talked to a bunch of National Guard folks yesterday when I was out in Greene County. And, boy, they are just working around the clock to try to put a Band-Aid on this thing.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Just to explain for listeners, the governor, Kathy Hochul, had to call in the National Guard to help maintain the security in the prisons during the course of the strike, and several of them are staying on the site.
Exactly, and they're staying on the site because the staffing shortage is so bad. I mean, think about how desperate these folks had to be to go out on strike knowing that they didn't have authorization to do it. I mean, I've had so many people say, well, Josh, it's an illegal strike. They're not allowed to go out on strike. I get that. They get that. And they win, they did it anyway, because the conditions they're in are so terrible that they felt like they had no other choice. And so, you know, Albany really has to take a close look at this, get some reforms in place so that 100% staffing means 100% staffing, not 70%, not 60%, so that these folks aren't as overworked as they currently are. It's just not sustainable, and it's not safe for anybody.
So are you saying that you don't think Governor Kathy Hochul has really done a good job with the resolution to this strike?
Well, the resolution to the strike calls for a committee to look at potential reforms. And my hope is that that committee comes up with reforms that provide the corrections officers the tools they need to do their jobs well, because right now they just don't have that.
Just to wrap up today, what's your plan for hosting town halls?
Yeah, so we're actually, today or tomorrow, we're going to announce our first town hall, which will take place next week. We're going to do them quarterly. So every quarter, we're going to put out a quarterly report that lets folks know the things we've been working on. We'll have a town hall at around the same time. And of course, in addition to that, I've been spending a ton of time with roundtables and sitting down with folks across the district. I've really tried to prioritize my time over these last couple of weeks, sitting down with folks who are facing the most challenging circumstances, given everything that's happening in the administration, folks who really need their voices heard. Just one quick example, I was down in Wirtsboro a couple weeks ago where the community is fighting with everything they've got to keep exit 114 open, because if that closes, it's going to decimate the town. And so I've been doing a lot of community meetings like that and really looking forward to getting everybody together for a town hall. I believe it's next week.
Well, that's New York Congressman Josh Riley, a first-term Democrat from the 19th District, and I will say, a now regular guest on the Congressional Corner. There's just no two ways around it.
I made it, Ian. I made it.
We're very grateful to have you on. Thanks for all this time, and we look forward to the next one.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.